Bonnie Gunn, everyone. This is Professor Almond Rock, Professor Emeritus, California State University's Long Beach Africana Studies Department, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. Also founder of the Black World Institute by me and Sarah Jabal, a video and recording, tape recording library of great speeches and events that Black people were involved in. So we're going to get started with our show tonight. We're waiting for Sarah Jabal to join us. He's fresh in from Cuba, so he'll be joining us. But while we're doing that, we're going to go and try to deal with some issues. Brother Mashinda, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, but this is going to be just a community conversation about solutions to Black people problems. And if you can think of a major problem that we need to have, that you recommend a solution to, I want you to share that with us. It could be the drug problem, the gang problem, the political problem in your area. It could be whatever you think is a critical issue that you think we need to address, and what do you think the solution is? You got that?
Yeah, that's kind of broad. That's kind of a broad. I'd have to think of something. You know, it's a lot of issues going on, you know, and I don't have no magic formulas for it, you know. I mean, we've been discussing them for a long time, you know, and
But then male female relationship, parenting, you know.
Yeah, well, you know,
we have so many problems. I mean, yeah. Some issues that's caused by oppression and caused by us not addressing them or seeing them as a priority. And that's why I was asking that. Okay, brother Ernest, you there? Is he available?
I'm on mute here. Yeah, because I'm like Mashinda. I've been thinking about this for a long time, too, you know, since the 70s when like a lot of our friends, because that was the time we met about, oh, maybe 18 or 19 Africans, you know, from when they come here to McDonnell Douglas to buy an airplane from East Africa Airlines and Zaire Airlines. So we had a group of guys from the Congo, and they came in, and they all spoke French. So we had a little bit of a different, they had one guy that was interpreting for them, but they spoke French, you know, because they were, Zaire was held by French. So we had a guy named Owens that he was fluent in French, you know, went to Cal State Long Beach. So we got him over a couple of times. He could really talk with the guys. And all of them that I met, because the dilemma I have is like people are saying, well, we should get us a leader and go back to the motherland, go back to Africa. But then, you know, all Africans that I met, it's kind of shallow because I only met about 20 of them, and that was like more than 20 years ago. They didn't want us over there because they look, you know, we had heart-to-heart talks, and they looked upon American blacks as mongrels. You know, and they even said that, kind of offended me, but I said, well, I'm not going to get offended because we trying to talk about this situation. So they don't really run us over there.
Oh, you mean them specific ones you talked to?
Right, just these ones. I've never visited the country, so I don't know how the rest of the country feels.
12 million miles, and then many different ethnic groups and land areas.
Right, because I just read in the paper today where in Benin, they're giving citizenships to, if you can prove your ancestor was a slave, you get automatic citizenship there. That's in Senegal. And so this Sierra, this singer and entertainer, she's getting the citizenship over there, and they want blacks to come over there.
Yeah, that was in the news today, right?
Huh? Yeah, that was in the paper
Now,
today.
what did you read it, and what did she say? You
Yeah, let me grab it and then go to somebody else. Well,
we're giving, Roger, what I'm trying to do is try to focus on some solution to many to our multitude of problems. It's easy to come on and just talk about problems. But eventually you have to, come up with the recommendations or how you see the solution, even if you're not able to put forth that solution, solution. What do you think would be a solution? Go ahead, brother.
what she's saying is, this is in Dakar, Senegal. So U.S. singer Sierra is one of the first public figures to become a citizen of Benin, and under a recent law by the, shit, my glasses, man. Say, under a recent law by the small West African country granting citizenship to descendants of enslaved people. Say, the Grammy Award-winning performer's acquisition of citizenship at a ceremony Saturday in the city of Cotonou as part of a broader initiative by Benin to attract the black diaspora, and acknowledges the country's role in the transatlantic slave trade, and promotes tourism focused on slavery-related sites of remembrance. And say, by legally recognizing these children of Africa, Benin is healing a historical wound and an act of justice, but also one of belonging and hope. Justice Minister Yvonne Ditten-Chadu said at a ceremony in September, Benin passed a law granting citizenship to those who can trace their lineage to the slave trade. And it is open to anyone above 18 who doesn't already hold other African citizenships and can provide proof that an ancestor or deported via the slave trade from sub-Saharan Africa. Balinese authorities accept DNA tests, authentic testimonies, and family records.
Okay, well, what do you think about that, Ernest?
Well, like they say, because I'm like this, my we were brought over here from our country, so we lost that, as far as I'm concerned, because my ancestors come in, they come to Virginia, then they got transported to Alabama, and then from Alabama to Mississippi, back and forth, and they worked plantations. I found that out. My great great grandfather on a plantation. I found him and my grandmother, and they worked the plantation and slaved here. So as far as I'm concerned, hey, we Americans, this is my country, because we fought and died and everything, just like everybody else, just like these white guys talking about white supremacy. Hell, they were imported here the same as we were. They weren't born here,
Okay.
so they don't have any more right, the white supremacy, than we do as blacks. And so if I'm gonna, just like the big thinker we had on a couple of weeks ago, he said, hey, I'm doing my thing right here. I'm not going to some other country where they may or may not want me over there.
All right, that's a good point. We'll get back to you on that. I got some perspectives to assist you in your perspective. What about you, Rasha Key?
I mean, there has to be some specific things to occur. I mean, it depends on what you're looking at. Like he was mentioning that the Africans, depending on where you go, I'm getting information from out of Ghana. And when you go to Ghana has its issues with a colonial type of mentality. You know, they've been colonized. They've been imposed. Christianity has been imposed on them. So you're dealing with a massive mind control apparatus that has been going on for centuries and centuries. And so when you're, and here's Dr. Sherita's coming in. She lives in Ghana half the time or part time. I don't know what percentage, but there, the mentality of many people, they're under mind control or they've been a victim of their environmental conditioning, mental condition. So when you, as you mentioned, Professor Ra, you can't let your oppressor be your teacher. So education, broader education, is needed. You know, more than one perspective. When I went from a recreational administration major to Black Studies, it offered me a wider perspective of how things, you know, could be or should be versus just this only lesson that you're getting from this European perspective that's been imposed on you. So to broaden your mentality, to be able to see other things in a well-rounded way will help. If education will help, you know, combating things that are unhealthy in the community, things like that will help. There's many things that can be done, but it's really a challenge. It took me years to get to the point where I'm seeing a little bit clear, you know. So it's I mean, if we have more Professor Roz around, Ernest McBride's, Brother Mashinda, Brother Ahi, Dr. Sherita, the people we have come on, if we have people in that type of with that type of mentality that's for, you know, a better way of living, you know, more community-based living. So, you know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle to bring about a mentality where you're actually being healthy mentally, physically, and spiritually. So it's a challenge, but so my point is broader education, a more well-rounded education will help people to think more clear and act in a way that they should act. So that's just that's a particular type of thing that has to happen, but it's a challenge with the demon mentality that we have out there.
Okay, well, is he on?
Yeah, he is there.
All right, are you there? Are he? You still on mute?
He was in his. He's there, but it maybe he's not able to speak at the moment. He's in his car, I know.
What about Sharif, Dr. Sharif?
She, I guess maybe she had bad connection.
Okay.
Yeah, she was here for momentarily.
Okay, like during the 60s.
She got class tonight anyway, don't she? On tonight, Tuesday nights.
During the 60s, there was a mass movement called the Civil Rights Movement, which generally was a Christian movement. That's where Sisters of Christian Leadership came out, and that's where SNCC, Student for Nonviolent Coordinator, and that's when most groups and everybody could galvanize it.
Enjoy, you.
everybody could galvanize that movement because it was just one that encompasses everyone. It's about civil rights, your right to vote on property, desegregation of laws that promoted segregation, eating at the lunch counters, all type of issues that were tied into one, discrimination and prejudice. Some people confuse racism with prejudice, and I'll get into that a little later to for a perspective. But, and that's the same thing, then the other movement was the Black Power movement, and it was talking about empowering ourselves politically, economically, educationally, socially. So it was more the themes and the movements everybody could fit into, everybody could identify with. Today, you have fractionalized issues, HIV in Black people, male-female relationship in Black people, economic and employment in Black people. And so they have fractionalized the issues that really could fit back in the civil rights and Black power, but they're fractionalized it to the point in which you have leaders in each of these small issues trying to make them national or make them more attractive to the masses. And they run into problems because some people don't see the problems that they're working on is theirs, or they have other priority problems, like crack cocaine, or at one time freebase, and one time alcohol, one time child molestation, or abortion rights, or things of this nature. So that's a whole different game. But Roger Q, who else is on? Anybody else come on? I can't see. Remember, Jabal's supposed to come on a car phone.
He is on.
Jabal?
No, he.
Is he still on?
I don't know what's going on with his, is he in the car? He's probably driving.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me just get into some issues. You know, just recently, as a matter of fact, today, but a couple of weeks ago, Columbia University was forced to pay some Jewish organization multi-million-dollar settlement, saying that Jewish kids were discriminated against and didn't feel safe, and that they had to pay this lawsuit and settle it, and also establish new rules for the campus to protect the rights of Jewish students and punish people who they say were doing anti-Semitic activity. Today, UCLA paid $6 million to settle a lawsuit saying that students were afraid to go to class and that they were discriminated against during what they call pro-Palestinian demonstration. When they weren't pro-Palestinian, they were really anti-genocide demonstration. But they don't want to say that because the people that's doing the reporting edit that out. They just kept it just pro-Palestinians. They had already demonized Palestinians so bad as terrorists that, you know, people say, oh, well, it wasn't that important. But anyway, getting back to the point is that, do you think that UCLA and Columbia did the right thing on that machine?
What was the core of what they did? I missed what you were saying. Just give me the core of what happened at Columbia.
At UCLA today, they sent a lawsuit by some students for $6 million because the students said they were afraid to go to class and they felt unsafe and that the university wasn't doing enough to protect them and pro-Palestinian rallies. And I want to know what your position is. And Colombia did the same thing. And you said they not only paid them $6 million, said they were going to develop special security for the Jewish students in the case these demonstrations happen again, and more serious punishment for anti-Semitic activities by people on campus. Go ahead, Machine.
Well, you know, we have what they call a First Amendment. That's one of, we got amendments in this country, you know, so people have a right to voice their opinion. They have freedom of religion, freedom of a lot of things. And so the university, UCLA is a public university, you know. It's a you know, University of California, Los Angeles. So so they accept students. So anybody that they accept, you know, the policies already in place. You know, there are policies and laws and guidelines in place for every student who that's admitted into the university. So somewhere in that handbook, somewhere in that catalog, it reflects the policies. And I'm pretty sure it says that, you know, that there's something about harassment, there's something about violence and trouble and things like that. So there's a student affairs division that deals with, you know, racism, discrimination, you know, foul play, violence, and so forth. So every student is protected under that. I don't care if you're a Palestinian, Indian, whatever you are, you're a Christian, a Muslim, you know, if you're accepted into that university, you know, you're protected under those policies and guidelines and laws. So it's up to the university. University is charged with ensuring that each student has an environment that's conducive to higher learning. Now, if those particular students that are filing lawsuits are troublemakers, you know, causing violence themselves, causing problems, you know, disruptions, you know, in areas where they shouldn't be, you know, because I'm sure there are centers or different locations on campus where you can, you know, express your opinions about whatever the situation is. That's what universities do.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a national government that is in the business of controlling what goes on every inch of the country. You know, they're trying to make sure that you can't do this and you can't do that. So that's a conflict in itself. So it's a no-brainer that file a lawsuit. Yeah, I'm all for it because of the fact that if nobody's doing anything about it, you know, now if there's documentation that, hey, they have these protections in place and this was addressed and that was addressed, you know, it might not come to all that. It might be dismissed. It might, you know, be a less of a, you know, outcome in terms of a payout, that type of thing. You know, if in other words, it's like if you're walking down a public building and there's water on the floor, and if there's no sign saying wet floor, you know, they in violation. At you know, but if there was a sign, although I fail, you know, at least I'm protected by that sign. I might, the person that fails still might get some money, but still the negligence, what, you know, we did say that, hey, the floor is wet, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just applying that to, on, you know, as far as the university of UCLA, Columbia, whoever, wherever it is, you know, the guidelines, the policies, the laws, the regulations are already in place to make sure that this student is not harassed, not, you know, not confronted with violence and things like that. Now, if they're part of the problem, then that's, you know, that's what the defense, or, you know, the people that are defending or actually on the other side of the spectrum that's going to get, that's representing the university, they have to prove that. But I'm all for any monetary solution or any positive outcome as it relates to students who are trying to, just exercise their First Amendment and all the rest of the amendments that might apply to what they're doing, So I'm all for it, and that's the way I feel.
Yeah, appreciate what you said, if I understand correctly. And I agree with you about that, but this was just for one segment of students. They saying that they were afraid to come to campus or to go to their classes, and that some of their classes were dismissed, so they were harmed. But there were other students who were not Jewish that felt the same way. I can't go to class, I'm not part of the demonstration. Yeah, I'm timid, but they didn't say that they would be a part of the settlement. They didn't say any student that felt that way should be a part of this student. But for one specific group of students, they granted these multi-million-dollar settlements, passed special laws like in Europe, in certain parts of Europe, you cannot criticize Jewish people. It's against the law. They have a law in their country that says that. And now you're getting on campuses laws that say you can't criticize Israel for genocide or for whatever Israel do, or you're anti-Semitic if you criticize them. Now, my point is, Machina, this is unprecedented, and it speaks to the power of the Jewish community. What happens is we used to call UCLA Jew-CLA, and like right now they call it New York, Jew-York. You understand? Because of their ability to lobby and pay people and Jewish money to politicians and for them to pass laws and rules for their protection and for their development and for them to have major influence on policy. Just like with Trump, he's upset about the war between Russia and Ukraine. And he criticized Russia for not wanting to come to the peace table and for not compromising. And he said it's too much killing. These are two white groups fighting each other. Too many people dying. If you follow the news, that's what he was saying. But he says nothing about Gaza. He does not criticize Israel for genocide. Israel came out today and said, ain't nobody starving in Gaza. And then he said, and plus, Hamas is stealing the food, and hijacking the food. And ain't no food even get going in. They won't let none in. You understand? So my point to you is that it speaks to the issue of that concern for a minute. But at the same time, we as a people must not it's not the Jewish people or the Jewish religion. It's the white Jewish people that has the fortitude and the money to buy the greed and the corrupt power brokers and economic brokers in this country to allow them to have, even though they're a minority group religiously, they're the smallest of the major Western religions, Christianity, Islam, and then Judaism, that they have the most power from the standpoint of economic leverage. Organization and let me give another example. You remember a few years ago when Trump came down the gold elevator and he said to the demonstrators at that college who were saying the Jews will not replace us. You remember that? Jews will not replace us. And that They said a whole bunch of negative things. And he came down and he said, now, there were good people on both sides. You understand? Because they both were white. You understand? They both were white. I'm going to get back to that in a minute. Okay. And so, but at the same time, he said that Muslims and Latinos come from what he called shithole countries, and they terrorists, and that he demonizes the people of color, but he balances the white Jewish movement, you know, and things of this nature. Do y'all see that? Anybody see that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. From that standpoint, now there's a movement. As a solution to our problems here in America, that Jabal is supposed to come on. She'll join us a little later, hopefully, with on the phone, but he was driving. He just got in from Cuba. That they were saying that one of our solutions is to move back to Africa. You've heard this on the show a couple of times. Mashinda, how you feel about that?
What? Expatriating down to back down?
Back to Africa. You think that's a good solution? Well, one of our major solutions.
Get up out of here, you know? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I was saying Marcus Garvey, I said, mentioning Marcus Garvey, you know, he was saying, let's get up out of here. Let's go back in the day. You know, it was like, so my point is that's always been a choice or a option in terms of, you know, but personally, you know, I mean, like, I think it's relative to your own personal experience, you know. Now, my thing is, due to the disorganization, you mentioned this back to the Jews and all of that, you know, yeah, we know that it's double standards, and it's, you know, they get certain privileges and things like that, you know, that, of course, that's what, you know, I'm not for all that, you know, that's wrong, you know, to be able to, you know, not be fair about what's going on. But, you know, but, you know, between COINTELPRO and other programs in America, we become so disorganized, you know, that, so I'm just saying, if we were organized to do that, it might not be such a bad idea as far as, you know, making plans to you relocate and things like that. But I don't think it's, I think for individuals, I think it's possible and it's probable, you know, because, you know, I see a lot of YouTube videos where people have relocated to different places and they're enjoying their lives and things like that. And, but I'm not dissatisfied with what I'm doing, you know. I'm not an unhappy person, or where I live and where I'm at. Hey, I've got a lot to do right here because, due to the disorganization, I'm trying to reorganize the thinking. I'm part of that process. So I think the end result, if we can organize, and yeah, it's a good idea. If or at least that's an option, you know, as a people. But like you say, the continent of Africa is vast. And like you said, it's multiple dialects and different cultures and things like that. It's not monolithic, you know. So all I can say is I'm not hating on it. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I think that those who want to go, and I tell you what, my wife and I, we discuss things like that all the time. You know, the possibility and or maybe buying property somewhere and going 6 months at a time and think, and not necessarily Africa. It could be in other countries where they have black folks, or people that are accepted that look like you or me, and that we can have a lifestyle and it's not as expensive as the United States and things like that based on economics. So, but all in all, I think that if an individual wants to move, hey, I'm all for it. That's a good, hey, if that's gonna make them happy, then go for it. At the end of the day, I've discussed that. I'm not against it. I'm not against it. But a mass exodus, I don't think it's going down. I don't think
No.
you're gonna have millions of black people at one time rolling out of here because we're not that organized.
Okay, good. Now let me just go back. I'm glad you say we're not that organized. When the Jewish people, you can ask a person, how many Jewish people were killed in Germany during the Nazi reign? They'll tell you 6 million. Is that correct? Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah, 6 million at least. But you ask how many Africans were killed during the Holocaust of enslavement, they don't know. I want you to hold that point. Second, when the Jewish people went through that Holocaust in Germany, white Jew against white German, they both were the same people. One was just religious, the other was Judaism, the other one was just following Nazism or white supremacy. But let me just say this. After they went through that Holocaust, they got paid reparation. They got given a lot of latitude in other countries to repatriate into different countries. Because before that, they were weak. That's why Hitler them could do what they did to them. Is that fair to say? I mean, to wipe out 6 million people and the rest of the world watching without even getting an opinion, because it was two white people fighting white people. Now, the next point is that they were given a lot of money, reparations. They were given a lot of. They had a movement that never again. Yeah, Never Again movement became the Jewish Defense League, and they began to develop organizations without any interruption, without any interruption. COINTELPRO did not assassinate Jewish leaders. COINTELPRO did not imprison Jewish leaders, Jewish organizers. They just empowered them. And doing empowered them, they began to develop their resources and organization, rightfully, as you said, Machinda, to gain power. But they wouldn't call it Jewish power. Their strategy was to defend ourselves so it wouldn't happen again, based on the countries that didn't intervene, making them feel guilty, and they got reparation and power. Whereas we as African people, COINTELPRO say, don't let them get organized. Use money, food, disease as a weapon. Same way they use disease against the Native Americans, as a weapon to us, to keep us from organizing. Are you following me? Rosh Lakish said that all the time. You can't let your oppressor be your teacher. But Malcolm said it like this: who taught you to hate yourself from the bottom of your feet to the top of your head? Who told you your nose was too big? Who told you your lips were too thick? Who told you your hair wasn't good? Well, where did we get the notion that white hair, stringy, mop-looking hair is better than our bushy hair? The whole purpose of hair is to protect your head. That's what it is. That's why they get lice and all kinds of stuff in their head. And it's hard for them things to get down to our roots. But that's the argument from that standpoint, Masunda, that the reason we're not organized is a part of the multi-million dollar budget of the United States Montgomery, of the United States of America, was to neutralize, disrupt, and neutralize all Black organizations and their leaders, from assassination to Asian provocateur, spies, listening devices, and making sure and using poverty as a weapon. If you don't have the money to organize, it's hard to organize. You understand? It's hard to organize. One of the things they said about in South Africa, the reason we only was paying the people 50 cents a day, that if you let them get some money, they may organize and buy weapons and go against us. That's what they said in South Africa. You understand? So you, what do? You imprison the men and you make sure that they be unemployed. Now, during the Holocaust of enslavement, we were 100% employed. Is that right, Ernest? I mean, there was no unemployment during the Holocaust of enslavement. Even the kids, soon they come out the womb, when they get 3 and 4, they were employed because it was free. Forced, Holocaustic, through fear. How did it? Through fear, torture, murder, and humiliation, and destroying anyone that was against them doing it. You see what I'm saying? Are you following me on this? Roger Keegan, are you following this? You there, Roger Keegan?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why we're not organized. A lot of people like to blame it on our inability. But every leader that rose up, political, it could be Paul Robeson. He had to lead the country. You understand? Frederick Douglass, he had to leave this country for a little while and come back. You understand? I mean, I want you to understand. You haven't heard after the Jewish Holocaust of anybody running Jews out of the country. You understand? Or killing their leaders. Instead, it's the other way around. But anyway, getting back to that point. So you have a response, Amashinda?
Yeah, the response is I agree with 100% with what you're saying. I mean, it's the reason why we, you know, it's there's disorganization, but you know, but still, it equals disorganization. It's not a matter. I mean, you know, of course, you know, you'd be wrong if there wasn't a reason. Of course, the struggle continues, and you know, people lost their lives, and it's that's well understood. You know, but at the end of the day, we're dealing with the fallout. We're dealing with the aftermath of all that. And so we were talking about, you know, packing up and leaving. You know, I said, if that was, you know, I don't think that, you know, and again, from the West Coast to the South, you know, there are people that might that have the means and the idea and the desire to do that. And I applaud that. You know, it's interesting to me. And if it's something personally that I would do, you know, hey, like I say, my wife and I, we've discussed many times different strategies and possibilities as it relates to, you know, making a break from the United States, you know, during, you know, but at the end of the day, but yeah, I get it. You know, of course, there's a reason why we're disorganized. But the thing is, I'm just looking at what the front line that I'm on, that I deal with on a regular basis. And there's a whole lot of level of the lack of understanding about what we just heard from you, you know, as far as why, you know, what happened and what is it that we need to do. If they don't know what happened, it's kind of hard to put them in that position of thinking that, hey, let's move forward. So, and there are concerted efforts to keep us from understanding and knowing. We all know that. That's what's going on as we speak. They don't want us in this country to learn history and things like that. Universities are being penalized and being losing funding and things like that when they have certain scholars there that are trying to bring light to the situation. So it's don't from my perspective, I know clearly, what has transpired, and the struggle that has been before me and during my time here. But dealing with these modern day folks, these generations who are here on the planet, multiple generations that are here after the fact, and but like you said, there are some people from all generations that understand, and they're doing well, and they're doing. But I'm saying, as a mass exodus, or just an alternative, as you know, hey, but it is an alternative, and I think as time goes on, it's going to correct itself. It's going to be a correction to where either you get with the program, understand what's going on, or you become a casual, and that's it.
Yeah, Clementina, appreciate what you said, if I understand correctly. And I agree with what you're saying. But we also have to look at the dynamic that we are faced with when they say our leaders are a threat to their country, like they said Martin Luther King was, and they came out with all the spying, like Ernest McBride Sr. was. When Ernest came on, he talked about some of them had to leave the state and some of them had to just get out the movement. But his father kept pushing, along with a few others. That's very critical. When you think about the issues, like you're saying, that the struggle continues. That's why I like what you said. Long as you're fighting, the war is not over. What they're doing to the Palestinians, trying to starve them and bomb, they rebombing the places they already bombed, trying to get them to Hamas to surrender, and they haven't been able to do it. With all their technology, all their satellites, all their drones, all their bombing, and starving the people. And the people haven't turned on Hamas because that was their people choice. And they'd rather die. That's what Trump said. I guess they want to die. Well, what they say was the price of freedom. Death. You understand? That's one of the prices. You can't buy freedom with dust or money. And Israel is frustrated. To the point that they're going to have to come to a negotiation because they're being criticized by world leaders. They ain't hold them accountable yet, but they before couldn't they wouldn't even criticize them, but now they're criticizing them and forcing them to open borders to let some relief in, and it's just a matter of time before and they keep saying it's Hamas who won't agree to the peace talk that America, who is enjoined with Israel in the Holocaust and the genocide, drew up a plan. And Hamas is saying, listen, unless there's a complete ceasefire and a pullout of Russian troops out of Gaza, we ain't going for no negotiation. What's the point of saying we're going to have a temporary a ceasefire for a month or 3 weeks just to let some supplies in, but we're going to go back to the bombing. And everybody know their whole purpose, and even white commentators are saying, is to get rid of the Palestinians out of Gaza because Israel want to move their people in Gaza. That's prime land on the beach. You see, I'm just saying that. You have a response, Brother Ernest?
Yeah, what you're saying, hitting the nail right on the head. You can have all kind of different weapons and war machines, but you have to win the minds of the people. You know, and like Hamas, you not winning their minds by doing this genocide, because that's what Israel is doing, and it's all over the paper even today, where it's a couple of groups in Israel that's even come out and said that, say you are doing committing genocide, and they're trying to deny it, you know. But you know, one thing you said there earlier kind of got back to me, and I think back to like 1963 when I first enrolled out at Long Beach State in the English class, where they made us say, I want you to go to the library and get this extra book. It's by Mark Twain called The Damn Human Race. And I read in there where Mark Twain said King Leopold in the 1900s, when they took over Belgium, over Congo, used to be the Belgian Congo, said they killed over 19 million Africans. And never said nothing about that. And then that always stuck with me all these years, where they're in the Israel talk, you know, whenever I hear somebody will say about Israel, well, we lost 2 million, 4 million, or 6 million, where the Africans lost 19 million in the Congo alone, you know.
Yeah.
So talk about that. And then, like you say, this slave trade, there's so many million that came over here, but it was twice that many was lost at sea and died at sea and thrown overboard before they even got here. So, see, they never talk about that, you know.
Yeah, but one thing, Ernest, we can't let them tell us that what they did to us in the enslavement was a trade.
Right.
Not business. That was not business. Because it's like you go into a store and you just start picking up stuff. There's generally people that stop you. Is that correct? All right. I mean, you don't have to pay nobody unless they stop you and you're afraid of the consequences if you're unfair. Mm-hmm. Who was monitoring the trade? The same people that they say, I'm saying that when some small African group that captured people and forced to sell their people to keep from going, but ended up going themselves, being caught themselves, because there was nothing making them God give anybody anything. It may be a few that did it, but the majority of the people were captured by white people because they portrayed it in Roots when they chased Kunta Kinte, OJ, who was playing, and Kunta Kinte, they chased them and caught them. I mean, it said, they smell like a white chicken when they come over here to hunt slaves. And you can smell them in the air because they stink from being on the boat so long. And so we have to look at this. And you can't tell me my Holocaust of enslavement was a business gone wrong. No. These were rogue people. This was different. But getting back to the point that we want to talk about is solutions. And as Machina said, that was very critical, is that, and you too, Ernest, that, and especially Roger King, 90% of our kids go to white schools or schools with a white curriculum. And even if you got black teachers, they're teaching a white curriculum mandated by the state and monitored by the Department of Education. You see what I'm saying? They choose your books in elementary school where you're most vulnerable. You don't even have a rationale to challenge teachers when you're in the kindergarten all the way up to about the at least the 7th or 8th grade, if you have parents that taught you to ask questions, we just did what they said and accepted what they said was teaching us. And the things that
Long Beach, were taught. When I came up through school, I never saw a black teacher till I got to college, you know, till I got to Long Beach State. First time I ever saw a black teacher.
Well, I understand there ain't some white people we can learn from.
Yeah.
If they're teaching the truth. But what we were taught, they not only taught us lies, they taught their own people lies. The white guy you see on TV playing moral positions, playing police, saving the country from bombs, always at the end of the movie, there's a moral message, an ethical message, saving children and watching them come back together, rescuing people. They got rescue movies and them giving their lives and they're patriotic and they moral. That's not really the institutions or the policies. That's in reality. You see? The real guy, the guy that you see out in real life, the one that had his knee on George Floyd's neck, the one who shot the brother and said, I came with his hands up. I want you to understand that. You understand? Look beyond the euphoria and the cobwebs of confusion that the guys throw out there through mass media. When they have mass media, they're in your house. When you cut that TV on, white folks are in your house. Same thing go with Rasha Key, who always have nutritional programs on. They didn't teach us about nutrition. There's nothing in public high school that teaches you about nutrition because it's anti-corporation. Corporations sell sugar and salt. It comes in different forms and food additives in different forms. That's why they had to start the FDA. You understand? The people were sprucing up food. They raised chickens so fast, some of them came up without feathers.
Yeah, yeah.
They came up without feathers. Yeah. And camel soup bought them all. You understand? Chicken soup out of them. Yeah, cow with what they call spider cancer. Then you know you go into the meat plate and they're supposed to have inspectors. They cut down on the inspectors. That's what deregulation is about. And you got cows with you eat meat that has cancer in it, or from a cow that had cancer or that was sick. That's why they get all those salmonella poison. Well, you know, you got to look at that. You understand it? This is about business. You watch TV. Our movie, at least 20 minutes of it is commercials. You understand? You know, we never had this many lawyers on TV talking about, come to me if you got a lawsuit. Matter of fact, they used to call them AmLam chasers.
Right.
You understand? They would pay people who were on the street, you see an accident, to call them. You understand? That was deemed illegal. Now, they can go on TV because it's deregulated and go in and say, oh, come to me. I'll get you your Social Security. Come to me. Even and the guy is almost telling you, I know how to get you your Social Security. You know? They have deregulated medicines on advertising where the side effect is worse than the cure of the medicine. You know, if you get blood, if you get dry mouth, if your throat gets sore, if you get diarrhea, it can kill you also now. Don't be, but you can have this. You understand? You can have it. On TV, right there in front of you, they tell you, this will kill you. And they deregulated it. It's all over the media, in your house. I want you to see how crazy and madness this is. Listen. when we, as Mashinda said, and all of y'all agree, that's why we're on Consciousness Education Network. We discuss these type of issues. We don't have the mechanism to speak to all our people. And as Mashinda said, it's hard to win the hearts and minds of the people when the guy's still pumping them with salt and sugar. When one of their main dreams is to get on a cruise. One of their main dreams is to get to Disneyland or Magic Mountain. One of their main dreams is to get the 31 flavors of Ben and Jerry ice cream parlor. Salt and sugar. You know, I'm free. I can get some salt and sugar. You understand? Worst drug in the world is food additives that goes into the food. And even if it's organic, there's a question about its authenticity as being organic, and that is it really organic? Here are people that lie just like Trump. When they're acting on TV, they're acting like these people that they ain't. But our people take them for reality. I mean, you couldn't count the mamas in the 70s that watched soap operas. They just deep into it. On Days of Our Lives. And none of our people lived the way they were living on the Days of Our Lives. You understand? I want you to understand how we identify with this guy. You understand? But trying to break that monopoly, you ain't going to get everybody. Some people, you ain't going to get them. You understand? Now, this is as we close. Let me just say this. We've tried interstate repatriation. We had black people repatriate what they call the great migration of black people from the South to cities in the East and West. You know, is that correct? I mean, black people went from Louisiana, Texas, and South to get away from racism. They moved to Chicago, St. Louis, and things this nature. Oh, even modern day black people are moving from racist cities and high priced cities to Atlanta and Texas, and sometimes even Florida. You understand? Where it's cheaper property, different weather conditions, but they're getting out of here. You understand? I want you to follow me on this. Roger Key, you followed Neely Fuller. And Neely Fuller got a lot of his information from Francis Cresswell. What did they say racism was?
White supremacy.
Global.
Yeah, global. Yeah.
It's global. That means they're everywhere. So the black people that moved from the South to Los Angeles, New York, in St. Louis, when they got there, they found there was white people there too. But they were so slick, as Malcolm said. They were political foxes that discriminated against you without you knowing they were discriminating against you. They created policies and customs, not as overt as in the South, like drink from a white fountain only. You understand what I'm saying? They just developed segregational communities and segregational things. And when you moved in, they moved out. You understand what I'm saying? Follow me on this. A lot of black people went to Atlanta. And they found out there was white people there. Is that correct? I mean, ain't white people, I mean, the Atlanta city is one thing in Atlanta, but the rest of Atlanta is rural. You understand? Georgia is a racist city, a state. The whole of Georgia. You talking about black people in Atlanta? You understand? Now, that's the same thing with going back to Africa. You know, you hear about the partitioning of Africa by European countries. They just cut it up. Wherever you go in Africa, there's white people. You understand? You just said they were colonized. There's white people. So America got over 25,000 soldiers throughout the continent of Africa. Russia got soldiers in Africa. France, Europe got soldiers in colonies in Africa, still there. Many black people that they put in power are neo-colonial. They say they're for democracy. As long as you elect a friendly government to give us your resources free and starve your people. We'll give you guns, but we ain't gonna give you food. You understand? You understand? I mean, I want you to see that. Wherever you go, it's a global thing. You think you can escape by repatriating? Hey, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself. I just want y'all to think about that as we continue our struggle on the Conscious Corner to speak truth to the people and to try to get us to do the things that Machinda and all of us on this panel want, as Rasha Key says, to think for ourselves, as Malcolm said. See through the cobwebs of confusion and blindness that obscure our people. The space you already in, and nothing under the earth but space. You know,
we can't hear you, Professor Ra. You was in and out for the last few minutes. You was in and out. Well, not about a minute.
I'm sorry.
But you good now?
Okay.
You can repeat that if you want.
All right. I was just saying that we tell people that you already, when they say we're going to space, you already in space. The Earth is round. It's not on a. The Earth is in space. It's in a solar system. It circles the sun. It circles the sun with other planets. You understand? And so, you know, the white guy thinks, oh, we're going to space. And then they say, when we see unidentified flying objects, are there other space beings? Yeah. Who don't know that? What make you think? That's just like Columbus thinking the world was flat. Because you see them, you don't think nobody else is you. And you make up some stories that God only created you. That don't even make sense. You understand? But anyway, we'll talk about these things next week. Take it on home.
Okay. Let's take a look at what we got coming up. Tomorrow, we have LaRhonda Hamilton. She's a professor, law enforcement professor, if I'm not mistaken. She's coming on tomorrow. And then we have a Roots Reggae Reasoning session show on Thursday with Barbara Barabino. She's highly notable for reggae in Southern California, even beyond Southern California, from probably the late 80s until the 2000s, early 2000s. She did a lot for reggae music, and she was directly responsible for Bob Marley getting his walk of fame in Hollywood. So she's very instrumental in reggae music, the foundational type years, well, from the 80s on up. So that'll be a real good show to sit and talk with her about her experiences in reggae music. So that's what we have on Thursday. Okay.
And I'm going to have Dr. B. Sensalo, who is from Uganda but lives here. And he makes frequent trips back to Uganda on next Tuesday to talk about Black Africans moving back to Africa.
Okay. That'll be good, Dr. Sensalo. All right. Ain't seen him in years. All
Yeah,
right.
all
So
right.
each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
Rasha
All right.
Keith, now what